Welcome, everyone, to the X-Factor Files podcast. I'm Daryl.
I'm Philip.
And we're here with a throwback to last season because we still have two 1993 annuals that we need to cover. This is one of those two.
Oh, no, I don't know what the other one is.
We'll get to it. So we've asked the phenomenal Demanda Martini to join us. Hello, Demanda.
Hi, hello. It is so lovely to be back. Thank you for asking me back and also being able to talk about one of my favorite eras of Excalibur.
Yeah, we're doing the Excalibur annual, which is, I have so many thoughts about this issue. There's a lot going on. I don't know who some of these people are.
Well, good. I can't wait to tell you.
I know.
But most of them, you quite literally don't need to worry about.
Okay. We have a lot of people in the credits, including Keith Williams, who did work on Alpha Flight, being one of the anchors in the main story, which is really exciting to see.
The backup story, which we will get to, but also like points for Joey Cavalieri for coming up with it. It was super fun.
The backup story is very cute. Again, we'll talk about it when we get there, but I of course have lots of great anecdotes about all of it.
Yes. So the main story, again, for those people who didn't listen to every episode of our 1993 season, which everyone should go back and listen. Demanda's there too.
That's right. I got to talk about Jenis Vell, a character who actually got to do something after his introduction.
Yes,
it's true.
These annuals all introduced a brand new character because Marvel could see that the ship was gonna sink in a few years. Like, they were like, "Ooh, it's the comic boom era. It's 1993." But it's sort of at that apex where it's like you're at the top of the roller coaster and you can see that it's gonna go down. Like, we are at that precipice in this year, and they are pulling all the gimmicks out, including like in other titles and everything. That's where you would get the foil covers and the lenticular covers and things like that.
Quite literally, when looking for this issue, because of course I still have my floppy issue, and when looking for it, I had to go through like three foil covers to get to where it was.
So in 1993, the editorial mandate came out, like almost every book had an annual, because there were 26 of them, I think, or 27. A crazy number of annuals that year. Every single one of them had at least one brand new character because they're like, writers, give us a new character. And some of the writers took that to heart and invented a character that could have some longevity. Some characters were like, you could tell that this was an editorial mandate. They're like, fuck. Okay, sure. Here you go. Here's my new character. Happy now.
Right.
I would say that this is one of the latter.
So like, this era, though it's my favorite of Excalibur, because like, this is like when I was like in it, you can tell that like, the Excalibur was on its way out of being its fun little British nonsense to being a part of the main X titles, which again, if you would like to hear about more of my thoughts on that, me and Sarah Century on her show Best Issue Ever talk about Excalibur 71, which is the end of the Fatal Attractions arc. So this story has to take place before that story, just because all of these characters are here. But like, this team, we didn't even get this team for like two or three issues. Like, it was almost immediately, as soon as this team was formed, it immediately started falling apart because of the mandate of bringing Excalibur back into the X titles. So like, this was kind of like a fun little treat to be like, oh, it's this team getting to actually go on an adventure together and like do something. Mm-hmm. Because they honestly didn't really get to. Which is great. But like, you can tell that like, because like, even the writer of this issue, Evan Skolnick,
yeah,
Never heard of him. He did not write any of the issues in and or around Excalibur at the time. So, like, this was like, hey, we need someone to write this story. And the guys over at Excalibur were like, girl, nah, like, I'm busy trying to figure out all this other stuff. So they got this guy to just come up with this kind of, you know, interesting, fun story. It is definitely evocative of the Cross Time Caper, because we're dealing with, like, alternate Earths and stuff. But at the end of the day, it does not matter. And not a single one of these things, like, carries any sort of weight. Because by the time, spoiler alert, but by the time this issue kind of came out, Cerise was already off the team. Kylan was already off the team. Farron was already off the team. Brian and Megan were already off the team. So it was kind of like, thanks.
No.
So I just looked up Evan. His time at Marvel, he worked on a lot of licensed properties. So RoboCop, Barbie, Bill and Ted. He did some work on Wonder Man, and NFL Super Pro, which you can find in your local dollar bin.
Yeah, so he was writing for the top tier, is what you were saying.
So his more important Marvel work, I would argue, is that he was the lead writer for Marvel Ultimate Alliance 2. So he has a big career in video games.
Yeah, which work. I love that for him.
Yep. And then Star Wars Battlefront. So he sort of rolled his writing work at Marvel into more licensed properties for video games.
Listen, somebody's got to write this stuff.
Like, yes.
And if that's what he went into, good for him.
Yeah.
Did we finish that video game?
I have. I don't know if you have.
It's the Civil War one, right?
Yes.
Yeah. They did Gambit dirty in that one. Like... And Iceman, not my favorite. There's better looks for him.
So this whole issue, like, yes, Excalibur is in it.
It is not about them at all.
It's a fun romp. It's
yeah.
A whole bunch of tropes thrown together, like, story beat-wise, we've read them before.
This is Dungeons & Dragons Excalibur.
Yep.
It's a quest.
Love that.
It's very magical.
Love a good romp.
So the main genesis of this story is that there is this creature from Earth, but spelled I-R-T-H.
Oh, dumb.
Earth?
Earth.
Earth, yeah, something like that.
Earth. I like Earth.
Earth.
Because when that character from Earth says Earth, it's in quotation marks, like, you know, it was a struggle for him. How it's a struggle for me to go from Minnesota Public Radio to National Public Radio. Like, I have to think, oh no, I saw that article on NPR, not NPR. Because nerd.
So we see a battle scene. It opens up with a battle scene.
Yes. Yeah. And I was like, am I supposed to recognize these people?
So, first of all, so on the cover, we have, like, this new character, which, Chaos with a K, already dumb. I hate it. For those of you who, who don't have this directly in front of you, this character is sort of, like, everything you want in, like, the 90s. He's got Archangel's wings. He's a dark elf. He's got double magic swords, weird armor for no reason, whatever, whatever.
For no reason.
Yeah, one of the things that I love about this cover, and by love, I hate, this is a Cerise story, and Cerise is, like, in the bottom, like, in between Captain Britain's legs, like, you can barely see her, because they put, like, all of, like, the sort of main Excalibur characters in the front, and it's just like, okay. So, on the first page... Again, it's one of those, like, oh, we're joining, like, in the middle of a battle. The only person that you really should recognize, if you're an Excalibur reader, is Cerise.
I didn't know. I don't know her. So this is
I don't know her.
I only recognize her because of the hair and your look.
Right, right. So I did cosplay Jamie Faye Jamie Faye did a redesign of her, and so I have cosplayed that before. But like, that's kind of, again, so if you're not like an Excalibur reader, if you're not in, because Cerise had like maybe like a couple of trading cards in from the Marvel series, so like people at this time might kind of know who she is just from like the trading cards. But no, she's not. Nobody knows who she is.
No. Also, like the 90s coloring, there's so much orange and pink and orange. And then the lettering is black on like
red.
It is fire engine red.
It's so hard to read. Like I opened this up after a couple gin and tonics last night, and I was like, wait, where am I supposed to start reading these text boxes?
Right.
A quality gin, because it was Vikra.
Yes.
The cedar
one. So like this whole issue, from an art and lettering and coloring standpoint, it is like, we called in the B team to throw this together really quick. There's a lot of art where people aren't colored individually. It's like the entire page is just yellow, or like the entire section is just green or whatever. And like, that's what this kind of is. It's to focus you on just like the two main figures, of course, but like, it's something that happens throughout like this whole story. And it's bad. It's bad. It, to me, even as a child reading this, I was like, this is a really lazy filler issue.
So,
no offense to the people who worked on this or whatever, but like, it's very like, no one really cares. We're putting this issue together.
And that was a symptom, I think, of them putting out 27 annuals. Like, everyone in the offices was pressed into service on at least one, if not more, annuals, which annuals are sometimes an opportunity for a lesser known writer to take a stab at a main title so that the regular writer can get a break and not have to write a 64 page spectacular.
Right.
But you could tell like they were running through their entire creative roster just trying to pump these out again in a desperate bid to drum up business. So
so once we get this mysterious and hard to see, like, I'm not that old, but I was still like, do I need the font enlarged? And we find out it was all a dream, because the final panel of that battle is Cerise being stabbed.
Right.
She wakes up, Nightcrawler bamps in.
Everyone comes into her bedroom. Everyone.
Kitty phases through the door without even knocking.
Well, because she's screaming.
Yeah, that's true. But we do get a shirtless Brian, and except they also did Nightcrawler dirty. They gave him a
He has a Springer tank on.
Right. But I mean, listen, the shirtless Brian, and like, we don't get to see them here, but in his green pajama pants, is a hard and fast, tried and true look for Brian throughout the entire Excalibur series.
Like, so I need to read the entire Excalibur series.
Like Alan Davis is like, oh, Brian has to enter in just these green pajama bottoms, and he wears this for like 4 or 5 issues. Okay.
Twist my arm.
Yeah, it's a delight and a treat for sure.
You have the first two omnibuses upstairs.
It's true.
So two things about Cerise's look. Number one, I think this is the only time we see her without like the whole headdress thing. So this is her like without the headdress, but her hair is, because she is, as we find out later, Shi'ar. That's just what her hair looks like anyway. Mm-hmm. But also, if you notice, they don't put in like her ponytail in this. So I'm assuming that it's just like this long, like feathery thing down her back, but we don't ever get to see it. And number two, she has been on Earth for all of like 2 minutes, and she's like, lacy top on my tits. That's 100% what one sleeps in. Like, yeah.
I went to your Earth store, Victoria's Secret, and
right. And like, the thing is that like, it is interesting. There are some issues where Kurt takes her out into like the world to sort of get her acclimated to stuff, and like takes her shopping and like takes her to the opera and all that kind of stuff. So like, it is kind of like cute that she's like, I like this. This makes me feel really. Also, just for like Cerise things, this story, obviously, there wasn't a tight cohesion of what Cerise's backstory was. So when Cerise is first introduced in Excalibur, she kind of comes at like this weird time when Necrom, the Anti-Phoenix, is trying to like crash all of the multiverse together. So all of these characters from the multiverse are just sort of like showing up and sort of join the team. That's where we get Kylan and Cerise and Pharaon to sort of like be on the team together. So it was kind of always assumed that Cerise is just from another dimension or a different Earth. However, like literally at the same time, around the same time being published, we get the issue of her definitive origin, which is that she is a Shi'ar soldier who, after witnessing the horrors of war, decides that she is going to murder her entire ship instead of letting them continue to murder innocent people. And so she's a Shi'ar war criminal, and she escapes to Earth to sort of like evade punishment. So
is she a mutant Shi'ar because she has powers?
Yes.
Ah.
Yes. So she's like, who's that guy? Like, I think it's Electron is his name on the Imperial Guard, where like he has powers, but he is just a Shi'ar person.
Oh.
And so she's also like, it's still unclear as to whether or not she's an Eri, which are the people that Lilandra is from, or if she is Shi'ar, meaning that she is just one of the many different races that the Shi'ar sort of have conquered. Because she, even though she has kind of like the feathery hair, she doesn't have the eye markings. She doesn't have like the kind of ridges on their like forearms that a lot of them have. So she's just sort of like Shi'ar, not necessarily Eri. But anyway, it's just interesting that like in this story, it kind of becomes a small plot point, but not a really well-defined one, that she is multiversal, not from this
sure.
From this dimension, but just from a different planet.
Yeah. I do like how Kitty tries to rationalize the dream. Like, it's okay. You were probably just dreaming about us. There's double swords, just like Kylan. There's
a black elf, maybe right. That's Nightcrawler.
Right.
And the creep that can fly sounds like Brian, maybe. But then it's also not all that comforting because, like, oh, I'm having a nightmare about my people who look like my teammates all trying to kill me. Like,
right.
But at least she can figure out, like, she can point to, like, a compass where the source of this is coming from.
Right. So two things about this image of like of them coming into Cerise's room. Number one, Kylan also shirtless. We love
the that.
But one of my so Rachel is like, Cerise, she's like, that's impossible for you to like be able to pinpoint where your pain is coming from because I'm like the Phoenix and I can't sense this power. And Pharaon says that he can't sense it either. And Pharaon in the corner is giving the hardest side eye to Rachel, and it's so funny. That little queer thing, he is such a delight. He did not really get a chance to like become a character, but he is just this bratty little gay, and he's a delight. It's something that, because I literally just read this about an hour before we started recording. Kitty calling Rachel Phoenix is weird. Like, Kitty she very rarely calls anyone like by their like code names. Mm-hmm. She's very much I grew up in this. I know all of you very like intimately and personally. Unless we're like on the battlefield, like I don't call you by your code name. And especially like Rachel and Kitty being like the closest of bestest of friends. Right. Wink.
Yeah. Like
that to me again just is like, oh, this writer kind of doesn't really know these people. And I wonder if also that's why he sort of made Cerise the focus of this book, because there wasn't really a whole lot about Cerise. He still got it wrong, but I feel like that's kind of why he made her the focus of it.
Her sheets match her outfit.
Well, yeah. Listen, when your name is a color, that becomes your signature.
I know. Where is it? I think it's later on. There's a close up here, but you can't see her ears, but she's got like very round earrings. I'm like, oh, Cerise, it's because her name is French for cherry.
Yes. So that was another one of my points. So like they all go. So Cerise like, well, I'm going. So you guys can either come with me or not to find out what the source of this dream is. And so everybody gets like suited up and ready to go. Cerise not wearing her earrings when she sleeps, but she's like, you better bet your ass that they are part of my uniform.
They are her battle earrings.
Yes, they are her battle earrings. And I 100% relate to that. Like the amount of times I've forgotten a ring or an earring, like it drives me. And like I'm not fully prepared for the day. I'm not ready. But then she has like the big button earrings, which are also some of my favorites.
I squealed a little when Uhura in Strange New Worlds got the neon green earrings. I was like, here she is.
Listen, we love a signature earring. So there are some characters that like they have, like, so Uhura is one. Cerise, in my opinion, is one. Just again, not a lot of people know Cerise. But another person is Amelia Vogt. It's like a ball that like comes out the back of her ear and has a second ball underneath it. And a lot of artists like picked up on that. And like, so she's usually wearing them in all of her appearances. And I'm like, oh, we love a signature. We love a signature.
So they tracked down where this bad dream came from. It was basically like a psychic emanation or something like that.
And it's not that far.
No, it's coming from like a castle.
And that's not far away.
I feel like Brian should know, like, have a map of the local castles, like, derelict or not.
And like, also, probably because he owns it.
Yes.
Yeah, like, a little gold star for Braddock Manor, and then, like, all the other castles around it, and somehow they did not know about this one.
And they're like, wow, it's sort of creepy here.
But Cerise finds a secret passage. She got a successful role for Perception.
And which also technically Cerise, like, again, one of her things that she has like a thing in her wrist that like tracks things, and it's one of those like, can someone get a reading on this? And she like pulls out her little wrist thing. So it's like, how she didn't do that to begin with, I don't know.
And they find this mage, again, going with the D&D theme, like this is a straight up mage in a secret room
with a cloak and a glowing quarterstaff.
He introduces himself as Gath?
Nath.
Nath? Again, lettering.
No, it's an H. It's Gath.
That's what I thought. It's Gath.
Oh, I saw it as an N.
It's G-H-A-T-H.
Which Gath. Also, for longtime readers, Cullen Gath is, you know, the villain who tried to make New York, you know, medieval or, you know, D&D times. Which, again, Celine was all for.
I bet. like, fun for a weekend. You go to, you have your Ren Faire experience, but then you just want to go home.
Right, right.
After that turkey leg.
but yeah, so again, like, reading the story, I just remember being like, Gath, I'm like, wait, why does that name sound familiar? This guy's definitely the villain.
So he's like, oh, sorry about that. Do you want tea?
Yeah, he's serving tea and crumpets. And is like, I'm trying to get back home. I thought I could do so under the radar, but haha, you found me. I'm gonna go back to trying to go home again. And Cerise is like, something isn't adding up here.
She's like, something suspicious. So them eating and drinking. So first of all, Brian just looking very British with his tea in hand.
He's smiling like a nincompoop.
Right. But the only two people eating are Kylan and Farron. And that to me is just like, yeah, because they're like, we know this isn't about us.
We're gonna enjoy the
right.
Side table buffet.
Right, right. We're just over here chilling. But this is where like Gath sort of makes the thing. Oh well, because I'm from a different dimension, and like all my interdimensional energies are going. Maybe that's why Cerise felt it, because she is also potentially from another dimension. It's like she's from a different planet, but like. Okay, cool.
And then we get chaos. Grand entrance, crashing through the ceiling, but also looking kind of hot.
I mean, listen. Elves are hot. Mad elves are even hotter. Like, and he has like the big archangel wings. He's got long hair. He's got two swords that glow pink. I'm in.
He's got like the silver armor contrasting with the rich green cape color that's doing good things, and he doesn't skip leg day.
No. So.
And the wings, the wings are like archangels. It's also giving me like the mechanical gargoyles from Gargoyles.
Yes. Yes.
Very like if they have an action figure, well. You should be able to detach them.
Yes. Yes. Also, very confused as to whether or not he's wearing pants because his pants are also black, or if he's just nude.
I think he's just nude.
It's the same color as his skin. Yeah.
I mean, there's some headcanon going on here.
So he smashes in and he's like, time to lay waste to Gaff.
I finally found you. Sidebar, there's a DC ad in here, which I wasn't expecting, like cross promotional.
Right. Very, very weird. But at the same time, Bloodlines was such a huge deal because it was like right on the heels of Death of Superman. So like, I get it.
Nice.
But also was Bloodlines also the same thing that DC was doing where they were introducing a bunch of characters in their yes. annuals?
Yes.
So that then also makes sense.
Yeah. The both companies did the same gimmick the same year.
Oh, so this also is like Skybox, and I think Skybox was the same people who did these cards. So it's the cross promotional
everything
trading card thing.
So we've got him crashing through. He's not surprised that Gath. Yeah, it's very Klingon. Has some new minions. And he's got a little idol that glows and it shatters Farron's little magic shield. It sort of zaps everyone except for Kitty, who's phasing, and Nightcrawler, who's bamfing.
And Cerise has up her shield. Somehow her shield
worked. Yeah, her shield did not break. Farron's did.
But that also just goes to show, like, Farron is very not good at his job. Oh. He's that's kind of like trademark for him. One of my favorite, so Farron, again, he doesn't have many, many appearances, but again, do you guys know who Farron is?
No, I don't know her.
So he is tied to the Phoenix Force as well, which I roll. Yeah. So in like, we'll just call it like the pre-existence, like millions and millions of years ago on other world where Captain Britain is from and all of that stuff. There was a sorcerer named Farron and this other guy named Necron, and Farron discovered the essence of life and brought it forth and gave it like a personage, shall we say, and that is the Phoenix Force. So the Phoenix Force already existed, but he's the one that sort of like brought it to have like a physical manifestation.
Okay.
They then use the Phoenix Force to create the Excalibur lighthouses, which, again, reading Excalibur, you know that those are sort of like these central locations in quote-unquote England slash Britain that gives the other world like spots that they can go to on all the different Earths. So Necron then tried to steal the Phoenix from Farron. He got him to go away. Necron went into space. And then Farron, then decided that he was going to watch over. And in that, the Phoenix then, like, went into space and no longer was with Farron. So this guy, Farron, the original, he then decided that he was going to wait for the Phoenix to return and that he would be there waiting for it. And so generations and generations and generations, generations later, this Farron is the heir to that original person. So he thinks that he is the heir to the Phoenix Force, whereas Rachel is like, kid, you can fucking take a seat because I'm like the daughter of the Phoenix. Like, you can fucking go away. So he's always hated Rachel because he thinks that she stole his birthright. So also he grew up in like this sort of like monastery type deal. So like people waited hand and foot for him. One of the things that I found really funny about him is he doesn't like walking on the ground because he can levitate. So like they forced him to walk at some point and he was like, my feet hurt. Because he had to like actually walk on his feet and he hated that. But there's the scene where Widget is trying to like come into the past to take the kids to the Days of Future Past, and like shows up, and like Farron and Lockheed are both like, do you see that? That's creepy. Let's go. And instead of like telling anyone about it or like doing anything about like these weird happenings, like they're just like, whatever. But then, so Farron's like last appearance until the end of the series is when Captain Britain gets thrown into the time stream and after their adventure in Days of Future Past, which again is like being published at the same time. Again, this is like this one side adventure that this whole team had together, which is so random. But anyway, so when Captain Britain gets thrown into the time stream, Megan, of course, gets very sad. And when you're an empathic metamorph who's very connected into nature, she turned into a waterfall.
Oh.
So she's just like sitting in this waterfall being sad. And so Farron decides that he's going to try to use his magic to help her. And instead of helping her, he gets trapped in her sadness because he's feeling sadness for the first time. And also turns into part of like the grass and the water and just like sits there with her forever.
She's having a very Niobe moment. She's just like endless tears.
Yes.
All metaphor.
Yes. Yes. But he's a delight. He only gets, you know, a couple of little issues. So then later at the end of the series, Farron comes back to quote unquote get revenge on Excalibur because they forgot about him. And it's like, dude, you didn't do anything here to begin with.
You don't even go here.
Yeah. Like quite literally. And the thing is, this is also like obviously on part of the writers too. So when Excalibur starts to live on Muir Island with Moira, which again, that's a whole other situation to talk about. When they go there, Rachel is having like these weird body swapping moments with Brian. And it's like really jarring. Again, you can hear more about it if you listen to me and Sarah's episode about Excalibur 71. And so Megan, feeling Brian is like re-entering this time stream, she like gets out of her like coma and just like shows up and attacking everyone, but like obviously forgot to like let Farron know that she's cool now. So he then shows up at Megan and Brian's wedding to like kill everybody, and then it just sort of feels like, oh, Farron. you silly boy. It's very sitcom. Sorry, I took us off on a tangent.
No, it's fine. Because that gives background to this character that's quickly just sidelined. Like,
yes! He is very incompetent at his job.
The way that the story is written, it's very much guest appearances from Excalibur. Like, yes. Like a very special appearance by Nightcrawler in this one panel where he's very beefy and looking great. Kurt is lifting a lot in the early 90s, much like everyone. Mm-hmm. So he just kicks Chaos right in the chin. But it's sort of like that in this opening battle. Everyone gets like one shot in. I like Rachel where she just steals this idol that's obviously giving power. And she's like, you think that you can get one past me? Like, I'm the fucking Phoenix.
Right, right. So she got zapped by the thing and she's like, oh, no, we're not falling for that again.
Sorry. Yep. So after this idol is taken away, then Brian just cold cocks him right upside the head.
Right. And in true Brian fashion, probably hit him a little too hard.
Yes, like it caused a little brain damage. So he's laid out and then Rachel is like, okay, Gath, what's going on here? And he's like, I'm going to give you a monologue.
It's such a long monologue.
It's a very long monologue where it's like, I was this ruler, but I got deposed, and now they're like trying to send people to kill me. It's the worst.
And the thing is, like, Excalibur is all looking at him being like, sure, Jan, we're going to take this guy with us and talk to him later.
Yeah. So they go back to Braddock Manor, which is A wonderful, they're not at the lighthouse at this point. So, they're back at the mansion because why not? And
right.
They, put Chaos in bed and,
sort of unexpected, like Captain Britain gave him a head injury.
Yes.
100%.
But also this bedroom has a laser grid so that people can't escape. So
it's like the brig on a starship.
It right. is.
You have a little room. You can have your bio bed in there, but there's still a force field.
So we do get some descriptive text that everyone went to bed. Excalibur is like, we're tired. They all
got up in the middle of the night,
yeah.
dealt with this thing, got zapped. I need to go back to bed.
And Cerise is the only one staying awake, sort of watching over the prisoner. And Chaos wakes up and he's like, so I'm guarded by one of Gath's minions. And she's like,
bitch, I'm not a minion.
Yeah. She's like,
I don't think so.
And so he's like, well, maybe I can sort of trust you. I have nothing to lose. I might as well tell you my story.
Yeah. She's literally like, the only reason we like got in with this guy, because you came in like swords a-blazing.
Yeah.
And again, this guy gave us tea when we met him. So like, you know.
What were we to believe?
Literal and figurative.
And she's like, also, we're not in Gath's castle. Like, you're in Braddock Manor. Can't you notice the difference between trash and class?
Can't you notice the difference between when someone has a budget?
Yes. So then we get this long, drawn-out history. Like, this
it's
is
so long.
This is really where you can see they're like, please, Evan Skolnick, just give us an annual.
And he's
like, well, I'm going to fill half of it with this background to a world that you won't care about.
And we could go through and like tell you all of the backstory of these characters, but it doesn't matter. This character's not been seen in almost 40 years.
And it's all the tropes. Like,
yes,
it's Hulkling. Like, yes. Born royalty on one side, raised by royalty on another. And
he found his true calling
bring peace to this epic war. And even on the map, it looks like the Western continent is America.
Right.
And then there's this island between the Western continent and the Eastern continent. It's like, oh, must be England.
Right.
And he's like, I'm a dark elf, but I was raised by light elves. But then I was like, I can't stay with you, really kind parents. I need to like go do other things.
I need to adventure.
So yeah. He goes, he's like King Arthur. He finds some friends. He like eventually gets a table to sit at with his friends as they bring peace to this island. And
but then the evil sorcerer is like, no, we're not going to do that. And so they capture this guy and they send him to,
it's a transporter accident. Like, he Gath messes up the spell that was going to be used on him to send him on a one-way trip elsewhere.
Right.
So now it's both Chaos and him that are now trapped on Earth.
So Cerise is like, cool story, bro. I'm gonna go check it out. So she flies off to go visit, to go see what Gath is doing. And Chaos is like, swords, come to me. and they cut through the lasers, and so obviously he's gonna follow along. Cerise arrives at Gath's place. Obviously he's his evil form now. They start fighting.
He got a glow up, and he knocks her out. And so Chaos is like, well, maybe they weren't wrong. Maybe they're not evil, but I'm still going to go after Gath. He goes, he sees Cerise trapped in a cell, goes to free her, and it's a trap.
Yeah. It's a trap!
Where's Admiral Akbar when you need him?
I know, so, listen. Insert Admiral Akbar at all, at any time.
So then there's the boss battle, where they're laying into one another. Meanwhile, at Braddock Manor, the team realizes that Cerise and Chaos are both gone.
Yeah.
And they're like, I bet we know where they went.
Right.
He raises the alarm. They go. We got some fun shadowy. Hopefully this is Keith Williams doing the inking on like the shadowy figures jumping out of the jet into the evil castle.
Yeah.
And they join the fray.
Yeah, and so then, you know, so we get like, you know, boss battles, everybody's fighting. Cool. So originally Gath was like, oh, well, I can use Cerise's quote unquote multidimensional energy. Sir, that's not a thing. To like get back home. But then he realized that if he uses
The
Chaos's little
idol.
like monkey idol thing, that they can get back home. So then Excalibur is like, he's escaping. We all should go through the portal. When in actuality, like Cerise, why are you following this guy? Let them deal with their own problems. Like,
Oh, we find out why later.
oh yeah. But it's like you guys, to me, it's like when straight people get in gay business. Like, no. We didn't need to enter this conversation. Like, it's fine. We're dealing with our own stuff. Let them deal with their own thing. So anyway, so they all go to Earth or however you want to call it.
And there were some shenanigans with the time stream. Gath made it time go differently. So he arrived, he had a few months, gathered a huge armada to besiege this island, and
And
Chaos
so
has
they're
friends again.
yeah. So now Chaos is friends, which again, you don't even need to know their names. No one cares.
They have silly names. The castle has a silly name, like Not Gab.
And like the whole time difference and magic causes issues, and the invasion fleet is coming,
And
and
like this grand epic battle lasts literally a 2-page spread. We get
yeah.
8 pages of like origin story and then like one sp like 2-page splash of this epic like battle.
And it sort of shows off like Excalibur lays waste to this huge armada.
100%.
I love
Excalibur's
the
like, no,
line.
thank you.
Yeah. I love the line where it's like Nightcrawler and Kailun are natural swashbucklers and they go at it with gusto. It's.
At least Farron actually like does something good in
Does
this.
he get his own like explanatory text
Yeah, he
somehow?
does. The sorcerer Farron, who flings magical spells never before seen on this world.
Oh, that's right. Megan, whose powers are like, I'm still sort of amazed at all the things that she can do. Her powers seem to be like her, a metamorph to whatever the writers need her to do.
So Megan, what we kind of find out throughout the Excalibur and Megan's sort of thing is that her powers are emotion and nature based. So what her emotions do is they get in tune with nature. Nature also includes people, which so as she's growing in her power, she finds out that she can tap into natural energies. So like she can like shoot blasts of sort of fire. It's kind of like crystal powers where it's like it's a natural occurring phenomenon, so she can get into it. The first time she kind of ever shoots a blast is she absorbs the other dimensional energy out of Brian and uses that energy to shatter the Excalibur lighthouse. I think that's an Excalibur 50.
Oh.
But like, yeah, but like now she like they've kind of shied away from it, but like throughout the 90s and until like the late 90s, she was definitely more like a I would say like a Cersei or a Crystal, where it's like, I'm just hot girl who can like shoot things out of my hands
Sure.
for a while. But like I don't necessarily like that. I like her better as like the empathic metamorph kind of a thing, but sure,
Yeah.
she can be connected to nature.
So the battle ends with Chaos decapitating Gath.
Who will be
Or
back at
so
some
it
point?
seems.
Yes.
Because he always comes back at some in some form.
And then we jump an hour later. Like, truly, this battle is a double page spread and then a time hop where Cerise kisses Chaos.
Does she kiss or does she give him a lip massage?
That running gag is so funny that that she calls it a lip massage. It's so funny.
And I love that, like, she kisses Chaos. Nightcrawler then looks perturbed. Like, something must have been happening between the two of them.
Oh, did you not know? Oh yeah, they're a couple. Like she's one of his like one of his like girlfriends.
Ooh. Oh, I mean, he's very skilled. I learned that when I read the Timekeeper.
Yeah, hold on 1 second. So like when Cerise, where is that? When Cerise gets sent off to the prison planet, like this is send off.
All right.
Sorry, there's the cover of Excalibur 70, which is before the craziness of Final Attractions. Cerise is in chains, and Nightcrawler and her kissing. I actually tried to redraw that cover several times and just could never do it. But no, Cerise is great. She and Nightcrawler have like this very cute relationship where, even though she's the quote unquote like normal human looking one, he's teaching her Earth customs.
Which is
very cute. Like in Cerise's first appearance, she's like looking around at like this, like, because Kitty, Rachel, Brian, and Megan are all off doing other things. And so when Cerise arrives at Braddock or at the lighthouse, it's Nightcrawler, the TechNet, Kylan, and like I think there's like another group of people, and she's like, so there's a lot of people here, like which of you is like sort of like base thing of this world that I'm on? And Nightcrawler is like, you're the one who looks the most human.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, that's weird.
So we get a little fun dialogue between Kitty and Rachel of like, oh, it's like Chaos is the Captain Britain of
the Excalibur.
Yeah,
of
yeah.
World.
And that was fun. I thought that was neat. And then there's a spell to bring Excalibur back, except Chaos goes with them because Gath has scrambled the eggs on that spell yet again.
And he gets pulled into the world and they're like, hey, you should hang out with us. And he's like, no, I have to go somewhere and do something else.
Which, again, we will never know.
No, because this is Chaos's only appearance.
Oh, no.
Ever. He is from Earth 9339, is where Earth with an I is.
Earth.
Earth. That's the story.
He flies off into the moonlight.
Yeah, and like the thing is that so this takes place somewhere in between Excalibur. It's
before the time hop. We get a little explanatory text, sort of like the Fall of Krakoa always had the explanatory text of like, right, here's the actual timeline of this.
But the thing is that it still doesn't make sense, and here's why. So, again, I'm like, again, as I said, this is like my era of Excalibur, yeah, right? So Excalibur is, they're kind of like all scattered around, and this is the warpy saga that ends up on Cloud Nine, which is, so there's this character that's from like early Excalibur. So pretty much like this is all Alan Davis wrapping up his storylines before the sort of takeover of the House of X. And so they're all being, the different people of Excalibur are sort of all being gathered to come to this place called Cloud Nine. So what they're finding out is that the magical energies that gave the Warpies their powers in the original, like, Mad Jim Jaspers, like, Earth nonsense that happened in the Captain Britain series, the magical energies are dispersing. Because Excalibur and Excalibur 50 sort of destroyed Merlin's sort of ties to our world. And so that means that all these Warpies, all these children who have had powers forever, are all losing their powers. And they all came under the care of government agencies that they were hoping to then use to be Britain's superpowers, that they were hoping to have like an Alpha Flight or an Avengers kind of thing. But all of these people are losing their powers. So they're hoping to like have Excalibur somehow help them and figure out why these things aren't happening. But it all turns out to be like, the government's terrible, they're awful. So they defeat this guy, Nigel. They release all of the Warpies, now all becoming, you know, regular human children again. And at that moment, Rachel shows back up from space and has decided that she is Phoenix again and that she needs to fix her timeline. That she's like, now that I'm like a whole person again, I really want to go fix my timeline. So as soon as they arrive back at the mansion or at Braddock Manor, Phoenix then takes them to the Days of Future Past timeline. They then go to the Days of Future Past timeline. They defeat Ahab. They reprogram the Sentinels. My delightful and beautiful Tangerine is introduced.
Hooray.
And as they come back from the Days of Future Past timeline, that's when we lose Brian. That's when Megan goes catatonic. So this story, this Excalibur annual number one, doesn't fit inside the canon unless this takes place in literally the hour in between them arriving back from Cloud Nine and Rachel contacting Widget and going into the Days of Future Past.
It's like that one night. This happens in one night.
And this literally happens. It has to be in like the hour that Rachel is like preparing to go to the future.
What a mess.
Yes.
Less of a mess, more of a fun romp, is the backup story.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
TechNet.
So, this is Joey Cavallari, who's writing it. Some heavy hitters in terms of other credits. We have Glennis Oliver on colors. So, she also is known Glennis Ween. Like, she's been at Marvel forever at this point. Like, she was married to Len Wein back in the 70s. Like, she is an expert in terms of coloring. I think it comes through in this as well. Like, she knows how to effectively balance out the colors.
Yeah.
And you have Richard Starkings on letters, which...
I noticed the letters. Normally I don't, but it's just really done in a fun way for some of these characters.
Yeah.
Particularly the accountant who... Or,
Numbers! I love him. Numbers is great. So...
What's her name? Gatecrasher. Gatecrasher has the good letters for like her weird little aside moments of like, oh.
Well, have this team? So that's not her. That's Yap talking. Her, the little guy who rides on her back.
Oh.
Yeah, that's Yap. He has lowercase text.
Yeah.
When he talks. So Numbers is so cute because he's this giant guy with these big claws and he's like this big lizard thing, but he's just their accountant. He doesn't do battle stuff. And also Numbers, if during the Crosstime Caper, do you guys remember the big dragon that attacked like Japan? It's when the X-Men come back from space. Like that we're talking like early.
Yeah.
Like kind of early uncanny stuff. He falls in love with her, that dragon, and they have babies together, and they're these cute little dragon lizard babies, and they're very adorable. Yeah,
I also love his big purple diaper.
Yes, he's so cute. My only thing that I don't like about the story is that Scatterbrain isn't there, and she's my favorite TechNet member.
So the title of the story is "Honey is Money."
And this dude with a massive helmet and red and gold armor has Numbers in a headlock and is trying to get TechNet to retrieve some nectar of the gods or like some sort of nectar thing.
For this hot lady. This is for a hot lady.
Princess Flavia.
That makes sense. Like Roman sounding name, Roman looking armor.
Yes.
One of the TechNet gets his ass handed to him as he tries to...
That's Pharaoh squared. It's Pharaoh with a little two? Like a little two up top.
Oh, that's cute. And Gatekeeper's like... No, Gatecrasher.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, maybe we'll take this deal. We need numbers. It's tax season.
Yes.
Like October 15th or April 15th is right around the corner.
Right, which is so funny. Because also Yap is like, well, we need numbers. We will never figure out how to file form 1040.
Yes. Yeah. So they're transported to this natural setting and they're like, everything's large here, first of all.
There's some weird physics. Like the pollen is huge And yet somehow...
they're like little balloons.
Yeah. Somehow they're causing an allergic reaction with what's-his-face squared.
Pharaoh squared.
Pharaoh squared.
So he... allergies, which I can relate to. Like,
but if the pollen is that big, it's not going to do that. That's why sneezeweed is a misnomer, because sneezeweed's pollen is too big to actually like affect people.
Well, I think there's a lot of flower, there's a lot of pollen in the air here, which is being made into this magical honey.
Yes. So they go, they find the comb, they walk in, body bag slurp slurps.
Yes, because body bags' literal powers are I ingest things and put them into body bags on my back.
Yeah. He's like, I got this team.
Yeah, he's like, I can do this. So, because like when you first meet Body Bag and Excalibur, who draws the sword, Body Bag literally like eats, I think, Kitty and Rachel and puts them like, so you see, like, so on this page, do you see how there's like the little, like, lines on his back.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And then you see how, like, as he swallows, it puffs up into, like, a little bag. It comes out of that little pocket. It's so gross.
It's like that monster in the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, where it's, like, the Pink Ranger storyline.
Yeah.
The monster eats everyone, and they get, like, little things on its tum-tum.
Yeah.
So they connect the dots. They're like, well, the pollen was big. This honeycomb was big. Shit, the bees are gigantic.
Which is so great.
It's great.
There are roughly 6,000.
They're so cute, and they have the little pollen packs on their legs, just like real bees. I could go on and on about pollinators and bees and how much I love them. So, I don't know any of their names.
So, her name's China Doll.
With great hair, by the way.
Well, because she's a lizard, and so the hair mohawk goes all the way down to the end of her tail.
I like the crackle factor on it between the white and the dark,
right?
And so she makes them all small, which she thinks like, hey, look, I solved our problem. And Gatecrasher's like, no, instead of big bees that we could hide from, you made all sorts of little bees that are stinging us now.
so the another great thing about China Doll is that she is also an idiot. Like, she's like that's part of her thing, is that she's actually really dumb. Because she doesn't understand, like, I shouldn't say she's dumb. She has a very low intelligence. Like, she doesn't understand things. And it's just so funny because she does shit like this. And they're like, you got, China Doll, stop. Like, stop. Like, let's stop and think.
She's like, I did it.
She's like, I did it.
So they, they're stuck in the honey, so they can't teleport.
And Waxwork makes it. The honeycomb lose its rigidity, but then they're like, well, now we're heavier than what's holding us up.
So they fall through. They are being pursued by these bees.
Like clouds of bees.
And
they finally get to, like, teleportation range and transport back. And they're like, dude, here's your sack of honey.
And then this blonde nincompoop arrives. Like, all sparkles, all flowing skin.
With her little baby cherubs flying around.
Yes,
her.
Yeah.
Flavia.
Like, with her handkerchiefs barely covering her.
Mm-hmm.
And the dude is like, I have thy nectar. And she's like, oh, honey, it was for you, for your acne. So now that you're hot, and now we can be together.
She's like, let me spread this honey on your face, and it instantly cures your acne.
And he was like...
but what about my chastity belt?
A, what about the chastity belt? And then B, he's like, why would you think sticking me in an iron mask would make my acne any better?
She just didn't want to see him. She didn't want to see it.
And she's like, we'll unlock your chastity belt once you lose a few pounds, which fucking rude, Flavia. What the fuck? And they go off and...
Poor Technet is left with their bee stings.
Yep. And that's basically the story.
Yeah, that's fun. So, so again, Scatterbrain's not there, which makes me sad because I love Scatterbrain. But also, Ring Toss is here. They're the little gold person. They don't get to do anything in the story. So, you know, they're just pissed being like, I came for nothing and I got stung by bees and now I'm pissed. Oh. But
they can file their taxes and that's what's important.
Right. Yeah, but they got numbers back. Which is great. I love the TechNet. They're so silly and so stupid.
It's such a it's a different type of fun romp from the main story.
Yeah, that main story again.
Like trope on trope on trope. Sure, it's fun.
And also like this doesn't matter. No one's gonna care about this literally by next issue.
Yep.
The fact that the actual story excuse me. The fact that the actual story can only take place in like the span of like an hour or two of them getting back from Cloud Nine before like they go off to the Days of Future Past timeline. It's like, why is this even here?
Yeah.
It was still, yeah. But it was fun. We get chaos. We get the, oh, I don't know you, so we're fighting. Oh, but now that I do know you, we're allies.
Yeah.
Yes.
And he flies off into the moonrise.
Right.
It's very much in line with some of the other annuals that we read.
Yeah.
Where it's like, you needed a story. Right. Sure.
Enter, do something, exit.
But it actually is sort of an Excalibur. So like, obviously, when you joined us for Silver Surfer annual, like, Silver Surfer was not in that story.
Yeah, Silver Surfer was, that was a Janice Vell story.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. So
I will say the X Factor one that I did was a little bit better. At least it was a little more X Factor. But even then, they were still guest starring in their own book.
Oh yeah, with Carrion with a K, because it's the 90s, and for all these silly names, you need to change a letter.
Right.
And the easiest one is a C into a K.
Yep. Yeah. So now I'll finally remember who Chaos is on the shirt I have with the Art of Lucas, because Jim Starlin pointed and was like, who is that? And I'm like, I don't know. I was straight up an idiot to Jim Starlin. He's like, who are these people? And I'm like, well, we recorded an episode about a lot of them, but I don't remember. Like, some of these one-off characters, cool designs, like Chaos. Great design for like an early 90s character, but ultimately forgettable in terms of why. What is this character doing?
Like so many people from the season that we've covered, like we never see them again.
No,
but they do have some good looks, and like the shirt is fun. It's just more fun when we can tell Jim Starlin who they are.
Right, and like I feel like that's the part that kind of sucks about it. And I mean, not to be Debbie Downer, but it's also kind of like, you know, Gail Simone's X-Men just came out this week. And it's like, do I need to care about these four characters that you just created? Because if history shows me anything, in a year or two, literally no one's going to care.
Yep.
Yeah.
Excuse me, except for the five people on the internet who are going to bond with these characters.
Yes.
Instead of like the Academy X kids.
Yep, I'm still waiting for the fandom to really turn out for those Children of the Atom characters that just went nowhere, Krakoa. Like, we're building up all of this Children of the Atom, and it's going to matter. And you're like, but where?
But it does, and it's only really that one girl who got to really do anything, and then she joined the Dark X-Men, and then that series ended.
Yep, Steve Fox was like, I can work with this, and then editorial was like, actually no one's going to work with this.
Actually no, we're not doing any of this.
Yep.
And Lost and Forget Me Not, but that's just me loving Legion of X where no one else did.
Right. But I mean, I still want to know where Trance is. Like, I love her and her little barrettes.
Oh.
I love Trance, but like this was already designed to be a throwaway story, and it just reads that way. You know, like I said, it doesn't even really fit into like the quote unquote main canon of like the stories that they were actually writing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah, it's a solid like middle of the road grade for me. Like it's something to read. It's something you don't need to know anything about. Like if you want to read Excalibur with just a little exposure, to the characters, and by little I mean you see them on a panel and maybe they punch someone once,
right. Or get zapped.
Like that's it's a good like generic superhero story you can jump in here. Like, okay, like maybe I want to read some more Excalibur.
I mean, that's where I fell since I haven't read a whole lot. I enjoyed it. Like, yeah. It's pure fluff,
right?
Which a lot of the annuals, no matter when you come across an annual, be it like the 70s through now, annuals are pretty much designed to be standalone stories that are hopefully going to get some new fans. Like you're trying to, you're making a big production. You're like, it's this year's annual. And you're trying to entice new readers to be like, oh, maybe I connect a little and I want to read the ongoing now. That's the purpose.
And I feel like annuals work better when those annuals are a connecting story. Like, for example, the Ahab story in the Fantastic Four X-Men kind of crossover, because that happened in annual stories, if I remember correctly. There's also that, is it called like the House of, is it the House of Pain? Is that what it's called? It's the Freedom Force. It's like the end of Freedom Force.
Oh.
Where they, and like, there's like, they're trying to get like the Proteus DNA or whatever. Like that story, like kind of works because like they're all connected. And I feel like the characters, well, so of all of the characters you guys read, is Janice Vale the only one that has like really done anything afterwards? So I feel like everybody else is kind of like a one issue.
You get
there's a few that show up as a background character for Civil War.
You get Adam X.
Adam X yep. is another one. But I feel like with Adam X and Janice Vale, they both have like that similar backstory where their origins are tied to like other popular characters, and so like their familial relationship to people.
They're nepo babies.
Yeah, but like at least Janice Vale, he had his own series for a while. Adam X, he was a joke for a long time, and then they're like, oh, by the way, he technically is a Summers brother, but not a Summers, but Summers by marriage.
No,
because he's actually was her name Kate, Corsair's wife?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to think of anyone else. Shard made her first appearance.
Oh, Shard did?
Yeah, a cameo. Like, she was not the promoted new character.
And she wasn't even physically there. It was her, like, a hologram version of her to mess with Bishop.
So, that's pretty much it.
And there are some fun ones. Like, we loved Nocturne. Mm-hmm. Wildstreak was fun.
Yeah.
Yep. So, the other one from Ghost Rider.
Rigor Mortis, our queen.
Yes.
With her little worm babies.
Yes. So
in a cemetery.
We'll send you the reference for Rigor Mortis because, like, I think you would like the character. And she appears in a backup. Not in the main story, not the promoted brand new character, but the one that we read and we're like,
Rigor Mortis.
We love her. She's like Thunder Rosa, if you know the wrestler, where like half her face is sort of, well, for Rigor Mortis, half her face is a skull. Thunder Rosa.
Oh, her. Yes.
Yes. Like, so good that we commissioned Art of Lucas to draw her. And then we're like, can you make sure that she's featured like separately so we can buy merch with just her on it?
And I'm pretty sure I'm the only person who bought a shirt with just her, but I love that tank.
Yeah, she only has the one appearance as well.
Yeah.
Like her Marvel like .com thing doesn't have any, like they don't even have like a like talking about her story. Like there's no origin. It's literally just like a picture of her.
Yep.
Yeah.
So you should definitely read that. I think you would have a lot of fun. Like she is a queen to the extreme. I love her. And if this is enticing anyone listening, like please go back and dig into our 1993 episodes because we take honestly deep dives on each of these new characters and sort of talk about our feelings. And it was a lot of fun to go through all those issues. A couple of them were trials. We're looking at you, both Punishers. But by and large, like, so much fun to explore, like, sure, chaos, toss away character, but I'll have an adventure with chaos with a K.
Cerise will have an adventure with chaos.
Yes. She certainly will. Well, yeah, now she's busy babysitting, you know, Xavier and Lalandra's baby, so.
Yeah.
Oh, what a step down.
So, Demanda, as we wrap...
What a step down!
This is coming out on Wednesday, August 21st. Looking ahead, obviously we have the Uncanny Experience, and here is our
newsflash.
Our organically placed advertisement for the Uncanny Experience here in this episode. It is coming up September 28th and 29th in Minneapolis, Minnesota. If you haven't gotten your tickets, you should go to theuncannyexperience.com because all three of us are going to be there.
Yes.
Yes, we'll be. And I am so excited. So last year we overindulged Friday night and then had to go home early Saturday. Like as soon as the main stuff was done on Saturday, we went home
to finish nursing our hangovers.
But oh my goodness.
But this year, one, we learned our lesson. Never go to a second location after that first one.
Nope. That is a trap. It's a trap.
And luckily our second location we went to burned down in the past year. So
oh my word.
A power pole fell on it.
Yeah.
Oh my god. Which
I think they're rebuilding and everything.
Which I hope so, because it's only like one of four queer bars in Minneapolis and in the whole Twin Cities. So we need them.
But anyway, we are being very temperate in our intake this year because Saturday night you are performing drag for the Uncanny Experience.
Yes, I'm very excited. I'm very excited to go. Again, I heard nothing but good things about it. So since it's coming out in a week from Wednesday, of us recording, I will have just come back from FlameCon in New York City.
And wow, what a fun time FlameCon was. Everyone should go to that.
So that was a lot of fun. But yeah, and from here on, it's getting ready for Uncanny Experience. So I have so I need to finish Mother Righteous. We kind of teased her a little bit that she's coming to the Uncanny Experience, but I need to finish her because I've had other things to be built. But anyway, I'm very excited for that. I have 5 looks.
Wow.
For a 2-day convention.
Which you are very generous in having one of those looks for my program.
Yes, yes. So. But yeah, so I'm very excited. And Mother Righteous is going to be at the con all day on Saturday, a part of the show on Saturday, and potentially a special appearance later on in the evening.
Ooh.
After the show. So She's gonna be all over. We'll see how long that makeup lasts.
Yeah, and we have a favorite restaurant here, Red Rabbit, and the manager knows us because we always have like X-Men shirts on. Uh-huh.
He always talked to us about X-Men 97, and he even was like, "Oh, there was an X-Men 97 drag brunch. Did you hear about that?" And we were like, "We were there."
And I'm like, if you like X-Men drag, you need to come to the Uncanny Experience where our friend Demanda will be performing.
Yes.
So that was just last night where I was talking you up and I was like, come on.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm so excited. I literally just downloaded my music today because of course I've been planning these numbers for a long time, but I finally like downloaded the music. So I'm going to start building these numbers so I can learn some words.
Yeah.
And last year the weather was perfect, and this year we have been very fortunate with our weather. Like now it's maybe 70 degrees outside.
That's nice.
Which is a perfect temperature for being in drag all day.
Yeah, girl. So you know, I'm very excited. Pretty much after the Uncanny Experience, I am, I'll have a couple of gigs and stuff, but yeah, there's no more convention things until February, which is, of course, like my big home convention, Farpoint, which I talk to my Farpoint people about that one, like, what, 7-panel character that you guys sent me. You did send me the issue reference for her. And when I told them about it and said that I was going to be wearing that costume on Friday at the con, everyone in our little group was like, shut up. Of course you are. That is so great. Like, that is so you. And I'm like, she doesn't even have a name. And they're like, that's even better.
I have to go back to that issue. I think I remember who wrote it. I need to double check. But definitely we should make contact with the writer and artist and be like, look, here we go.
This femme fatale character who literally did nothing.
Yes.
I have been enjoying our Star Trek content. And when you're talking about annuals, the Star Trek Defiant annual was all about Sela and Tasha.
Oh.
So that might be worth checking out.
Okay.
Yeah, so...
Or I can lend it to you while you're here from Uncanny if you would have time to read it, but I know it's a very packed weekend.
It's a very packed, like, to be honest. So I'm getting there Thursday night and staying through Monday. Mm-hmm. But from what I'm gathering from the people who went last year and just from Dylan and Chandler, I don't think I'm going to have a whole lot of free time.
Probably not. But for other folks who are going, there's the podcast social that we'll be doing again. There's a great space for it in downtown, like lots of tables. We filled the space last time in like an appropriate way where it's not overly crowded, but it's full a really good time.
When is that one?
That is Friday evening at 5:00. So everyone listening, as well as you, Tamanda, it is at Brewhaven. Same location as last year, new ownership, and technically new brewery, same equipment. So it's from 5 to 7 technically. So that way people can pop in, meet some people, then they can still go to the X Mansion and get the registration done if they want to check in early so you don't have to bother doing it Saturday. And if any of the Omega level ticket people want to come, they can still show up, appear, and still get to the Omega reception that's happening later in the evening. So Alicia Wilder will get to come this year because she's going to be needed at the Omega reception, but she can still pop on over and just hang out for a little bit.
That's what I was asking. So it's like, I'm definitely going to the thing that's later that night. So I just want to make sure that, but also, so like Friday, we don't need to talk about this on the podcast.
It's fine. We'll connect.
But yeah, but no, I'm very excited.
So everyone, as we wrap up, check out Demanda on all the socials at Demanda Martini. Everywhere on social
everywhere media. Literally everywhere. My most favorite ones that you can check me out on are Cash App and Venmo.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much, Demanda, for chatting with us, going through an Excalibur annual and giving us the inspiration to read more Excalibur. That's what it's all about.
I hope so. Excalibur is so much fun.
Yeah, thank you everyone, and we will catch you next time.
Be well.
Bye.